Welcome back to the Star Court Lounge, everyone. Today, we are going in a bit of a different direction from our normal episodes. Today, we are moving into a review. In particular, I'm going to be chatting about The Legend of Zelda's older, more damaged cousin, Elden Ring. Elden Ring, as a quick recap for those of you who might not be familiar, which I think at this point are very few people, is a action-adventure RPG game from the developer studio known as From Software, who are famous for the Soulsborne games, ranging from Demon's Souls, the Dark Souls trilogy, Bloodborne, and Sekiro being their most recent entry, up and until Elden Ring. They are infamously or famously known, depending on your preference, for making very brutally challenging games where one of the core mechanics is your player's repeated death and massacre at the hands of grotesque, larger-than-life bosses while trying to stave off rot and stagnation. And Elden Ring is no exception to this rule. I will preface this. I have about 24 or so hours in this game, and I am nowhere near completing it. I've only beaten two of the main story bosses, and I've spent most of that time generally exploring, because the game world is absolutely massive and endless. At first, you start off as a lowly Tarnished, your player character in this game, similar to the Hollowed or Unkindled in previous games, and your goal is to just go. It's like Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, but with significantly more body horror. And I love it. I've always been apprehensive in the past about Souls games because of their notorious penchant for extreme difficulty. But the more I've played it, and the more you persevere, it is infinitely more rewarding having beaten a boss in one of these games than in any other game that I have played previously. And a great deal of that reasoning comes down to the fact that From Software doesn't hold your hand. They give you a brief tutorial area of the basic controls, and then you fight an introductory boss who 98% of the time is meant to completely and utterly destroy you. Case in point, spoilers ahead, Elden Ring, you start off exploring. You progress through the fairly linear walkways and everything, and are met with a hideous spider-looking thing with like four swords and a giant golden shield. And all of a sudden there is a boss health bar on the bottom of your screen saying Grafted Scion. And you're like, oh damn. I'm like 10 minutes in and I'm already fighting a boss. And this thing is hideous and looks like it will really wreck my day really fast. And you know what? You aren't wrong. If you're familiar with Souls games, you could probably have a pretty decent chance at beating them and getting some pretty cool weapons and stuff in the early game. But more than likely, you're getting wrecked. But that isn't the end of your game. You come to conscious in a pool of water in a cinematic. You follow that dungeon in which you wake up, and you find yourself in the lands between, with a giant glowing golden tree ahead of you, a man in a white mask to your left, and down below in the valley, a very heavily armored golden knight on a horse. And from there, the world is yours. There's a main story that you can follow with the guidance of Grace that you'll see from Spots of Lost Grace, giving you rough and general direction towards the next main story area. But you could also completely disregard that and head off the complete opposite way into the forest, or to the beach, or wherever your little heart desires. And that is the wonderful thing about Elden Ring compared to previous From Software games. In the past, they have generally been open world to a point, but generally a bit more linear, and you'd frequently backtrack or go to different places to grind up levels. Case in point, the three most recent entries that have garnered a lot more attraction and popularity with the series, Bloodborne being a PlayStation exclusive, Dark Souls 3, and Sekiro. Bloodborne is a little bit of an outlier in the overall FromSoft or From Software formula, same with Sekiro. They were both more innovative to an extent compared to the Dark Souls formula, which was generally been, you got a multitude of different classes that you can kind of choose from, and that'll affect your base stat allocation, as well as some starting gear stuff. And then you create your build to best optimize that skill set. Dark Souls 3, 2, and 1 have found you going throughout various worlds within the Dark Souls universe, trying to relink the fire to stave off stagnation and rot in the world. And you have various different choices and companions and quest lines that you can go about doing as you see fit within that world. And the combat has generally been more of a patient blocking, occasional parrying, but finding your opening and knowing when to strike and not overextending and getting demolished. Whereas Bloodborne and Sekiro both kind of flip that on its head in a multitude of different ways. Bloodborne, for the overall world building and traversal, stays true to the Dark Souls and Demon Souls formula, but where they significantly different outside of general setting and story being more Victorian medieval Lovecraftian than medieval fantasy, is that Bloodborne fosters a more aggressive play style. Bloodborne, it's real big combat difference outside of more limited weapons, there's no specific classes and stuff, are if you take damage from an enemy and you immediately follow that up with attacks, you can actually regain all that health back if you deal enough damage, which incentivizes the player to play more aggressively and be the hunter that you are kind of set up to be, which is an interesting dichotomy between them. And Sekiro, which followed several years later, holds to a similar standard, but it's a more balanced. The idea with Sekiro is that rather than chipping away at your enemy's health in 95% of the instances, you're actually working towards building up what they call posture, which is a bar at the top that indicates, based on a variety of factors, such as successful parries, blocking, just general attacking. You can break that posture and open up your enemy for an easy kill blow. which is really cool, satisfying, seeing as you're supposed to be an elite shinobi, or basically a ninja, who is supposed to be very efficient and effective at doing his job of protecting his master. And that posture parry system does an excellent job of simulating that. Now, that long sort of tangent aside brings us back to Elden Ring, in which the multitude of years of development and iteration have culminated in this perfect melting pot of all that was good from all the previous games. It bring back, albeit in an unseen manner this time, enemy posture, which, when broken, opens them up to critical hits. They have the traditional, slower, more block-oriented stamina management of Dark Souls, and you can be more aggressive, like in Bloodborne. They even went so far as to implement and put into the game an amulet that simulates the whole, you take damage, you deal damage back, you heal up the damage you took. So they've just taken everything they've built up and made over the years and thrown it into one melting pot of amazing gameplay. Now, you may ask, yes, gameplay is important, but what about the story? Well, historically, From Software has been notoriously obtuse about their game story. They prefer storytelling in a very vague manner through bits of random NPC dialogue that you might interact with, but they heavily rely on item descriptions to give backstory to characters and to kind of explain overall story and various cinematics. For instance, Dark Souls 3. The whole story premise is that the First Flame is dying again, and you are essentially the, let's say, F team. You are no one's first choice to fix this problem and relink the fire and save the world. Who came before you are previous Lords of Cinder, historic heroes of old, who in the past succeeded in linking the fire and sustaining the life of the world. Well, with the flame dwindling, the current living Lord of Cinder, the individual tasked with the duty of linking the flame and saving everyone, decided that, nah, I'm not going to do that. So, previous Lords of Cinder were awoken to fulfill their duty once again. And what do? They say, screw off, we're not doing that again. So that brings it to you, to go fight these Lords of Cinder, fell these great heroes, and link the flame, or don't. But the wonderful thing with that game, that's more or less all laid out in the first couple of minutes cutscene, and then you'll get some of the additional stuff sprinkled through in various NPC dialogue and boss cutscenes. But none of it is crucial to your enjoyment of the game. If you just want to go in and play a great sword-wielding, shield-armored guy who's just going to beat people's heads in and beat big, challenging bosses, you can certainly do that, and you don't have to necessarily care about the story. Same with Bloodborne and every other Souls game. One tiny exception to that rule is with Sekiro. Sekiro is a significant outlier in the overall Soulsborne franchise. It is, by comparison, a more limited gameplay experience. For instance, while Bloodborne does have fewer weapons than Dark Souls, it has multitudes of weapons that you can kind of choose from and play with. With Sekiro, you have your Kubisabi Maru, which is your little katana sword, and that is the only melee weapon you will use throughout the entire game. You will be able to augment your shinobi prosthetic, which is a prosthetic arm that has a multitude of different functions, like a limited grapple hook, shurikens, and firecrackers, and various other implements that you can kind of kit out, upgrade, and use in various situations as is needed. But, combat and gameplay aside, the big divergence in the game overall is its heavier focus on a more explicit story and narrative. There are more frequent dialogue interactions with NPCs that explain kind of what's going on. But there's also the level of vagueness that FromSoft is well known for, namely in character backstories, still kind of through item descriptions, overhear, like certain endings are locked behind, you have to overhear certain conversations secretly, and it's not immediately apparent. But overall, there is a more heavily story-focused element to it, which I have no strong feelings one way or the other. Sekiro is probably up to this point my favorite FromSoft game. For whatever reason, the combat and stylings spoke to me and resonated with me a little bit more than Dark Souls. Elden Ring has toed the line with explicit story and implied story. So you get kind of that bridge, the best of both worlds, on both everything from gameplay and combat to narrative and story, which I find very intriguing in this day and age of Ubisoft-style titles or EA-style titles where everything is very explicit. Here's your next goal. Here's your sparkly little trail or whatever it is to find your next waypoint and objective. Elden Ring is bucking that trend, which is good to see, because as mentioned several minutes ago, when you get into the world, you can do whatever you wish. You can go running off into the swamps and find that you're significantly underleveled and getting demolished by basic enemies, and maybe you turn around and go explore someplace else. I know within my first probably 2 hours of playing, I was generally following the golden guidance to follow the main story. And I found myself in the area called Stormvale Castle. Well, do I have a story for you? I'm wandering around exploring, and I enter into an area, and all of a sudden, there's a cutscene. And there's a big, ugly dude just chatting with me. He jumps off of a castle, and a boss bar appears. I'm like, oh damn, I'm not prepared for this. And subsequently get wrecked. Previous Souls games, you'd be hardwalled at that fight. You would have to get good enough or get lucky with summons to beat that boss in order to progress. Not with Elden Ring. A few attempts later, making no significant progress, I decided, well, this is a big world. I'm just going to explore, maybe level up, find some cool weapons and accessories and armor and stuff like that, and I'll come back later. Which, long story short, helped significantly, which is really cool. But as you're exploring, you're like, oh, this is a pretty big world. and then you continue exploring and checking your map, and then it gets bigger. And as you progress further, it gets even bigger. And they're like, wow, this is a massive map. Like, there can't be more. But then there is. There's an entire underground area that you just happen to stumble across, and you're like, oh, dang. I think the thing that really put scope on the world for me is, like, I was exploring, found a little tomb dungeon thing, went in, found a treasure chest. I'm like, cool. Let's see what treasure's in there. I open it up, and then a billowing silvery smoke emanates from the chest, and a little text box says, you've been trapped in an ensnaring trap. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means. Next thing I know, there's a loading screen, and I'm teleported across the map. I open my map to see where I am. I'm like, oh, damn, that just, like, doubled the available world size that I can access right now. And I am significantly underleveled for this area. So, I ran away. After some brief exploring, of course, because what kind of player would I be if I didn't explore? And after maybe 3 more hours of exploring, leveling up, I went back to Margit the Fell, your first gatekeeper boss, quote-unquote, and was able to defeat him with some help. And progressing through, finding the next boss. I think my favorite part of Elden Ring is the exploration and not knowing precisely when you just happen to walk into a room and all of a sudden it turns into a boss fight. Every once in a while, especially with the main story bosses, you get a pretty decent idea that you're going to be coming up on a boss. A lot of the main boss hub sections are going to be your more traditional kind of dungeon crawler, like Dark Souls-esque world environment that you'd be used to from previous games. But in between those, it's just a massive open world that is sprinkled with different catacombs and dungeons, and all of a sudden you could be walking through there and have to fight a big bad boss or other big bad tough evil dude who just wants to take your head off and graft it to its body or do whatever Elden Ring baddies do, because the world is messed up. Some common criticisms, though, that I have heard, which I can find some merit in some of them, are the obtuse, vague story, the punishing difficulty of the bosses and enemies, and that there's no quote-unquote easy mode or difficulty settings and sliders available to you in this game. Well, a lot of that has never been the identity or forefront of what From Software makes, and that's what makes their games so unique and different, is they really don't care what the modern gaming trend is. All of their stuff is a self-contained world and game. There's no microtransactions, which a lesser developer or publisher would implement. For instance, there's a limited use item called a stone sword key that when you collect and find these little gargoyle imp statues, you can use to unlock barred areas. And there's only a limited amount of those, from my understanding, available to you in each new game cycle. So from start to end boss, in that cycle there's X amount. So that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to access every single area available to you or available in the game locked behind those. So you have to make tough choices. Well, a lesser publisher and developer would probably be like, well, you could go and explore and grind for these, spend in-game souls, or in this case, runes, to purchase them from in-game merchants, or you can just go to our, let's say, rune shop, pay real-world money for a pack of 15, and maybe some extra runes and a weapon skin, or a weapon, and that'll run you $40. So, pay to be convenient, and pay to win, and you lose the entire identity of every game that FromSoft has ever made. The idea is face challenges, overcome the challenges, and move past those challenges. The start to finish, the story arc of even one boss fight can be as satisfying as the entire story arc of a standalone game in many instances. If you run into a boss that is just hard bodying you, and you're spending hours and hours doing everything, learning the boss's moveset, his patterns, and then you finally get the sweet text of great enemy felled, and you beat him or her, and you can progress, the feeling of elation and triumph and success of overcoming that obstacle is immeasurable, because you earned it. You did everything in your power. You strategized. You upgraded your weapons. You earned the victory. You didn't pay for that victory. You put in hours and sweat and rage in a lot of instances to overcome that insurmountable obstacle when you started. But you achieved it. That is the reason that Souls-style games, because now it's an entire subgenre, have prospered and been so successful. Granted, there are many games that try to mimic the formula and maybe not do quite such a good job for a variety of reasons, whether it's combat isn't as fluid or responsive, or multitudes of other reasons. But From Software has perfected the formula that they implement in their games. It's a kind of rise and fall of action and difficulty. You start off maybe with a spike of difficulty to kind of set the precedence that this world is dangerous and you will die. And there's consequences to that death, but they are not game-ending consequences. Yeah, you lose your runes, you lose your souls, but you can still retrieve them back. You're not completely lost out unless you die a second time without retrieving them. And then you'll kind of hit that spike, you'll get some of the more tutorial area. You're like, okay, I'm beating some of these bad guys. I'm like, I'm getting the hang of it. And then they hit you with your first boss. And that is just a roller coaster ride of stress, excitement, triumph, and despair, which is core to many of the stories that Elden Ring, Dark Souls, Sekiro, it's key themes to their story. So not only are you experiencing the story from a narrative perspective about these characters' triumphs and hardships and despair, because a lot of NPCs are not too happy. They are very, very depressed individuals a lot of times. But you as the player get to take on some of that and experience it yourself. Not as just through your character, your avatar in the game. But you can feel that stress and despair and triumph as you're just traversing the world, beating bosses and beating bad guys in difficult areas. Which is one of the golden hallmarks of the Soulsborne FromSoft genre and game series. It is that sense of triumph as you overcome insurmountable odds and difficulties. And all that is not to say that there aren't some implied difficulty settings and difficulty curves within the game. I personally play as a more strength-based melee build. I currently am wielding a katana and shield with heavier armor, and I love running up to the bosses and baddies and just smacking them with a sword until they die. That is one way to play it, and I don't generally use a lot of sorceries or other things that would use up my focus points or mana, is what some games call it. However, there are other classes that you can play that will actually affect the perceived difficulty. You can play like an astrologer or some of the magic caster based types of characters and fight a lot of these bosses from range. And there's a lot of different weapons, tools, and spells out there that can trivialize certain bosses. I've seen clips of sorcerer-based classes who get this kind of like magic sword thing that they just thrust into the enemy. It stunlocks the enemy, and 15 seconds later, the boss is dead, and they move on. So while FromSoft doesn't necessarily put in traditional difficulty sliders and settings, there still are inbuilt difficulty curves and things that you can do to adjust the perceived difficulty of the game, which I find a very elegant manner in which to kind of address difficulty in a game. Granted, it's not for every game, especially if like the game itself is meant to be more accessible to a multitude of different play styles without being punishingly difficult. I can understand why you'd want to have difficulty sliders and stuff like that. You can have games that use both implementations in the world. I just don't think you're going to find a successful game that will implement them both in one game with implicit and explicit difficulty. I just don't think it's going to match and work. But I find that Elden Ring, while it has its challenges, to me, as albeit a veteran of these types of games, is one of the easier ones that I've had to play. I haven't had any real soul-crushing instances. There have been frustrating moments where you lose a bunch of runes, but I haven't run into anything that was just bashing my head against a wall for 3 hours until I just either succeed or I just put the game down for a couple of days. I keep wanting to come back to this. So I think with Elden Ring's implementation of some of its new features, like Ashes of War and different summons and how that have been revamped, does give a greater flexibility to players and their ability to overcome in a multitude of different manners, whether alone and solo or with cooperative help from other players, to achieve triumphs in this game, which some people might not like and be like, well, yeah, you beat Margit, but you beat it with two summons and an Ashes of War, whereas I beat him solo, no hits. Great. Yeah, the person who beat Margit in this game might have beaten them in a completely different manner. And your skill levels might be significantly disparate based on that. But I would say that that is not a very strong argument, because that has been the case in pretty much every Souls game up to this point, with one exception being Sekiro. Again, setting itself out for whatever reason. Sekiro had no online component. So, with the exception of probably one significant boss near the end game story of that campaign or story, when you beat Genichiro on top of Ashina Capital. Or Castle, not Capital. That is because you implemented the skills that the game has taught you to defeat him. One player that beats Genichiro there and the other player that beat Genichiro there might have significantly different experiences. One person might have had a much more difficult time versus the other, but in the end, they will have both overcome Genichiro on their solo merit, based on their skill with the game and its mechanics. Whereas in other Souls-based games within the franchise, or however you want to define that, Elden Ring, The Dark Souls, Bloodborne, and so on, because you have build options from melee to range to spellcaster, one player that beats one boss might have had a significantly more difficult time than another player, but that could be down to anything from their skill level to just the build that they chose to run in the game might not be as optimized against that particular boss. Or the other player that had an easier time might have used summons, which I have no qualms or issues with. I use summons if I can't beat the boss or get a good handle on it within the first 10 or so tries. I'm like, you know what, I want to progress. I'm going to try with summons. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, you keep on trying and persevere. So I personally don't have any issues with people using summons and Ashes of War. Those are there in the game for a reason, to help supplement your power and trend the difficulty a little bit towards the easier side for those players, which is a great implementation, as said before. Now, you may say that there was a lot of rambling going on in this review, and I'll concede that point. Yes, there was. Now we've come to the heart of the matter. Is the game worth $60? Would I recommend it? What is my rating on this game? Well, with 24-ish or so hours, and having gone through and beaten probably the first two or three main bosses of the game, I would say my recommendation is an emphatic yes to any Soulsborne veterans. If you don't have this game already, I'd be very confused. It should be on your system, on your hard drive, PlayStation, Xbox, whatever it is that you're playing it on. And you should be just having the greatest time, because this is a game that you don't get very often. For players that are newer, may have dabbled in the Soulsborne series, give it a try. See if your friend has it. Let them give you a try on it. See what you like. Or buy it, give it a try, give it a couple hours. If you don't like it, you can always return it on like Steam or on Xbox Marketplace and stuff like that. But across the board, if you have any sort of even fleeting interest, at least give the game a fair shake. Who knows? You might like it enough that you might start dabbling in some of the older ones. And now, drumroll for my overall rating on this game. And I'll preface this that I play on PC, personally. I would give it probably a 9.8. The combat is excellent. It is fluid, it is responsive, it is engaging, it is fun. World is massive. well-designed, great attention to detail, and great density of options and action in what you can do in the world. Story, albeit I'm not terribly far in it, up to this point, is engaging and interesting, and I want to see more of it. But what holds it back from being a 10 out of 10, perfect game? Well, that's where my platform of choice kind of comes into play. So, Soulsborne games have been notoriously, how shall we say, less than perfect on their optimization on PC. And the stuttery kind of frame rate issues as you load into new areas or as you're traversing the world can sometimes be very, very annoying. Generally speaking, I've never really run into any of that issue in a boss fight. It's usually when I load into a new area for the first time of that session of play, and it just has to load in all the different shaders and stuff like that. And granted, that can be something that can be fixed down the road. But it can be a little bit of a detriment, especially if you're running through the world with a bunch of different enemies chasing after you, trying to fight them, and the game starts to kind of go haywire. If it were perfectly optimized, easily a 10 out of 10. If I was playing it on, say, like a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series system, where a lot of the time and effort has gone to optimization for those systems, because it's a fixed hardware platform, there's less variables and variability in that, easily a 10. Once that shader stuttering frame rate stuff is patched and fixed, 10 out of 10. But at this point, I would say 9.8 out of 10 for a game like this in its current state on PC. Excellent. It should be a hallmark of game design, game implementation. Like I said, you don't get games like this very often, and when you do, they make a lasting impact. People are still playing Dark Souls 1, are still playing Demon Souls, are still playing Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne. Not because there's some pay-to-win implementation where you have to log on every day to complete your battle passes, but because they are truly well-built games with a strong vision of what it needs and wants to be, and not some hollow shell designed to print the company money. And that is why I recommend Elden Ring.